This is a warning just to let you know that there may be some spoilers in here about some current comics, specifically involving Batman and the X-Men and marriages. So once we get past the discussion of the toys that made us, there is some spoilers, probably about a 15-20 minute type spoilers about the weddings that just happened, and you might want to skip that part or skip this until you get to read that material and then come back to this episode. I just thought I'd give you a warning. Thanks.
Hello. You there?
Meow.
Meow wolf.
Meow meow. Meow meow.
Meow, meow, meow. Is this how we're gonna do the whole thing?
Yeah.
Meow.
We're not. Chris isn't on, but his cat is.
Oh, cool. I wonder what the cat read.
Probably Catwoman number one.
Yeah, very well could be.
How's
Give
everybody?
Me that microphone. Give me that microphone. Hold on. Oh, hi guys.
Hey.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. I'm doing well. How are you doing, Mike? How are you doing, Chris?
Good.
Yeah.
Pretty good. I've been on like a little bit of a vacation since the holiday.
You're on a vacation?
Kind of. Well, just a stay-at-home vacation.
Yeah. You've been off?
You mean since the 4th?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
I took the days after that off.
Yeah, I can't go back to work on a Thursday. That's like hell.
I took Thursday off, but I went back on Friday. Work needed to be done.
Well, it needs to be done where I'm at too, but sometimes you just say, hey.
So yeah. What I want to know is why do people not have the proper appreciation for Jubilee?
Jubilee? Who's that?
Jubilee.
Is that vampire mall girl?
She's not a vampire anymore, as you well know if you read the last Generation X series.
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah.
The only time I ever really read Jubilee was back like in her early days when she was new.
Mm-hmm.
And that's you loved about it. She was all right. I've never been a huge fan.
Oh, my God. What is wrong with everyone?
Same here.
I can't believe you guys.
Even in the cartoon, she was annoying with that yellow
raincoat. I don't know anything about the cartoon. I read comic books, damn it.
You never watched the X-Men cartoon?
No.
Wow. Uh-huh.
No. No, I never read I never watched an X-Men cartoon.
That was huge.
I was too old by then.
What do you mean you're too old by then? I was older than you.
Well, I was in that, you know. Well, when was that? That was in the 90s,
you
right?
You just watched Coco? Yeah. What the hell are you talking about? You're too old.
Coco is a quality movie.
So is X-Men.
No,
do you still horrible. Think you're too old for it, or did you just think you were too old to it at the time because you were?
I think that I thought I was too old for it at the time because, you know, I was a. I don't know when it was out. I was in my 20s. I would guess my early 20s. So yeah.
Well, you didn't think you were too old for comics then, did you?
Did I think I was too old for comics?
Yeah, I don't think you ever had a period like that, did you?
No. 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 Comics are for all ages.
Oh, but cartoons aren't.
Not silly TV cartoons. No.
I don't think the X-Men cartoon was silly, though.
I wouldn't know.
See?
Uh-huh.
It was in 92.
Well, apparently, I was 20. So apparently it was a very bad cartoon if it didn't give you the proper appreciation for Jubilee.
Well, how is it going to if the comics didn't manage that?
I can't even believe I'm hearing what I'm hearing here.
I don't think anybody that was in your little poll there picked Jubilee. I think that's your own thing.
Do you remember when Jubilee rescued Wolverine? from the Reavers all by herself.
But they undid
he was,
that.
He was stuck. He was stuck up on that. On that.
That was all a dream.
Was not a dream.
Yeah. Chuck Austin wrote that out.
You guys are dreaming.
I don't think you have a lot of support in the Jubilee fandom.
No, I don't think I have any support.
At least, like, in maybe there are kids that read her and, like, that's their Kitty Pride or something, but...
Well, this is all that I this is all that I could
say. A lot of fans.
Maybe
all
if right? I was five when she came out, I would have appreciated her.
I'll put this against anyone else. I've read every single issue of Uncanny X-Men from one to the end, and that gives my opinion more weight than anyone else's.
Not
really. Apparently everyone else hasn't read the full series like I have, so they don't have the proper appreciation. There. I solved it.
I mean, I think I read everything up to and including, like, when she was around in the early years, and then she was kind of gone from the book.
Yeah, she was gone for quite a
while.
So,
I mean, I didn't read, like Generation X or anything like that, but...
No,
I mean, I think
we
you
survived
just...
Inferno. Beaten Freedom Force, the Sentinels, and Magneto. But how can we beat the M Squad? That's her first appearance cover.
Uncanny X-Men 244.
Uh-huh.
I don't hate her. I've never been a big fan. But, I mean, I feel like you shouldn't be so upset. You should enjoy... being unique in your Jubilee love, just embrace like
yeah, fuck
being
everybody
different than
else.
Other people.
That's
you know,
right.
Like I like when I am different.
Yeah,
I like when I like stuff that other people don't.
Well, you know what? I just had such a high opinion of so many of you guys that I just assumed, and so you know, it's kind of a shock.
Kind of a shock.
Yeah, that you know that all these people that I love and admire just have such poor taste.
No, there's just so many better X-Men than Jubilee.
Incorrect.
So many.
Incorrect.
Jubilee's like towards the bottom.
No, that's not correct at all. Yeah, however, I would like to ask you. Maybe I can ask you, Mike, because Warpath appeared on a more than. A couple, I think, like three people had them in the top five there. In my opinion, he hasn't been in enough to even have much of a personality. What do you personally like a lot about Warpath? I know he can't speak for Ronnie or Nick, who also had them very high.
X-Force. I mean, he's a big part of X-Force. That's where I got
like
to know
about,
him
But
from.
What do you like about him?
His backstory and stuff. Plus, I love his brother. I mean, he died in the first X-Men comic I ever read.
Yeah. You know what I was very surprised about? That the fact that he's able to fly.
Yeah, Native. I'm into the Native American characters too.
But he doesn't seem like a flying character.
Well, he doesn't usually. You don't usually see him flying.
Yeah, it's so much so that in that last Weapon X thing, and he was flying. I'm like. Where did they get this from? And so I had to look it up and saw that, yeah, he at some point he was given the ability to fly in the past. I had no idea.
X-Force Anyhow, was awesome. I liked it a lot.
I really don't care for X-Force. I'm not a big fan.
I'm a huge fan, especially Uncanny X-Force when they had those little night goggles and they would go do missions that nobody else could do.
I thought it was too, I don't know what the word is, too on the nose in terms of just trying to be, like, extreme for the sake of being extreme, I guess.
That was a different comic.
Yeah, Extreme X-Men.
Which wasn't very good.
I saw sort of it in passing... But I didn't look too closely at the Twitter thread. Was it top five X-Men or something?
Yeah. So, Chris, run down your top five.
Oh, boy. I have to think about it. I'll get back to you.
Okay. Hang on.
Nightcrawler's all right, time gotta is up. Be up there.
Yeah, Nightcrawler probably would be.
Yeah.
Jubilee probably.
It was one of my favorite back in the day.
He already said Jubilee. No.
I thought you were asking for my top five, not my bottom five.
Not my bottom five.
That really hurts, Chris, especially from you.
I think you just put that out there because you don't really like Jubilee.
No, I love Jubilee. You can go back and listen to like older podcasts, even when I was, or even like you'd have to search and search, but old arguments I would have on Twitter with like Nick and stuff, because I love Jubilee. Again, too, not the cartoon. I don't know anything about the cartoon.
She's too young of a personality for me to embrace.
Well, you gotta embrace your inner 14-year-old girl.
Yeah. I don't have that 14-year-old girl in me. But now I know you do, which is all great and all.
Yeah. Yep. Connect with my feminine side.
I'm more of a contemporary X-Men guy, so like I like Cyclops. When he like started to be a badass and make the tough decisions.
See, for me, I'm the opposite. When Chris Claremont wrote Cyclops, I liked him, and then I thought that he was ruined after that.
I think he was lame back then.
Me and you, I think, have 180
differences for the I'm not an atypical X-Men fan, so.
Huh?
I'm not a typical X-Men fan. A typical no. X-Men fan is like, oh, Claremont, I love you. It Claremont's was the best awesome. Ever. I'm not that.
Oh, I know. That doesn't mean that you don't have to be right every time.
I'm not right. I know what I like, which makes makes me right every single time.
So what else is going on, guys?
Not much. I don't
How was your holiday?
To work.
How was your Independence Day?
It was good.
Huh?
Too short. I need a vacation. I need 2 weeks. This little weekend bullshit sucks.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Well, me and the wife started watching season two. I don't know if you guys watched that documentary, The Handmaid's Tale, but we started watching season two. Oh my God, it is frightening as hell.
I want to watch it, but it's on Hulu, and I don't have Hulu.
So. Yeah, just get a trial. It's
yeah,
fantastic.
But I have so much TV to watch. It's like I don't need to add another TV show.
Yeah, and you'd have to make time to make sure you know you can get through it. I mean, it's in the trial, so you don't have to pay. But I mean, it's an excellent show, but it really honestly feels scarier because of, you know, the current American environment. It's like they're filming like actual like things that are really happening in real life instead of a pretend story.
Yeah, it's like the Purge.
Yeah.
The whole Purge is of the current administration.
Oh my God, it's crazy.
Yeah. I don't like to think about it. I just can't wait until it's time. God, I hope we get him out of there and replace it with something better. At least something tolerable. That's all I'll be. I'll be happy. Uh-huh. I don't need the greatest. I just want something better.
Anything would be better. Like.
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. So what else is going on? Chris, what have you been up to?
My brother-in-law and his family were in town with my nephews, so I've been spending a lot of time with them.
Well, that's nice.
That's mostly what we've been doing in our time off. Mm. Yeah.
That's cool.
Because they, you know, so I haven't seen them in a while, so that's been nice. That's mostly what we've been up to.
Cool. I watched the whole second season of The Toys That Made Us.
Oh, yeah, I did that too. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah I thought so too. I think overall I liked the first season better.
Season better because of the toy selection.
Yeah, but even that Barbie season, episode was great.
Well, yeah, the Barbie selection was the best one, in my opinion. But it had a lot more interesting things in it.
That's what I thought. That, yeah, just generally, I think it had a more interesting
Star Trek
story.
One was my favorite.
Oh yeah.
Probably followed by the Transformers. No, no, followed by Lego. I like the Lego stuff because I don't
Lego
know
one
much
was
about
pretty good.
Lego.
Yeah.
And then the Transformers, and then Hello Kitty.
I didn't like
That's
Hello
how
Kitty
I'd
as
rank
much
them.
either.
Yeah, it
Yeah,
was
me too.
hard to watch just because it's interesting that it's such a phenomenon.
Yeah.
But I wasn't ever interested in that stuff. But it made a lot of money, I'll tell you that. And it's kind of like
Yeah.
one of those toys, just keep it simple, and they kept it simple and it made a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But it's interesting. I like what we were talking about him a little bit yesterday with some family, and we were recommending because one of Stacy's cousins hadn't seen it at all, and we were recommending the episodes. And like, if you don't want to watch all of them, you have to watch the Star Wars one, because you know he was a Star Wars fan when he was a kid and stuff. Like, it's just fascinating, like the financial deal that Kenner got out of this, and
Well, even the
you
Star
know all
Trek
of that
one was
stuff.
interesting because the Mego had a chance. They could have had the Star Wars license.
Right.
It's just that guy said, "Hey, you have nothing. You're showing me pictures of something, but you have nothing behind it. How am I supposed to market it?"
Yeah. You know, I
And
think
he
I
admitted
was
he blew it. Like he's like, "I blew it," but
oh,
all he
big
spent was
time.
like 5,000 on the Star Trek license, and he made millions. So if it wasn't for tax evasion and him going to prison, he would have still been pretty rich, probably.
Was it Bill that said it? Because somebody said, and I want to say it was Bill, and I think I kind of agree with it, is I didn't like the Star Trek episode quite as much because it wasn't a linear story about like a certain company making the toys. I don't know if that was Bill had mentioned that maybe on
Yeah,
the
Geek Brunch, yeah.
podcast. Yeah, because you know, I mean, they had licenses with everyone, so obviously it was the history of Star Trek
I liked it more
as
because
a
of
toy.
that.
But
I thought it
I
was
like
great because you saw
oh.
all the lame shit as well as the stuff that people that got it right.
I preferred like the Star Wars type story where it was one following kind of like one company until they finally lost it and moved on like that. This one was a little bit too much all over the place for me, but I mean, I still enjoyed it, but I like it when it's just like I like it more when it's one company kind of.
Alphabetical, yeah.
Hey.
J for Jubilee.
J for Jubilee.
Favorite characters that begin with J.
I like the Joker. Joker's pretty cool.
Jack of Hearts.
Oh, you like the Jack of Hearts? Sure.
He has one of the best costumes. I like it.
Chris?
I'm trying to think of one.
Jack
Jack in the
O'Lantern.
Box?
Yeah, Jack and the Jack O'Lantern. There's two of those. There's one in DC and one in Marvel.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't you see one.
Jack O'Lantern was a Global Guardian,
Oh, that's right. Yes,
and
thank
he
you.
was also in Primal Force.
Yeah.
Jack O'Lantern was in Spider-Man. I just read
Yeah.
something with them.
He's got a little that little pogo thingy.
Pumpkinhead.
Yeah. Chris, are you ready to announce your top five X-Men?
Jem, the son of Saturn. There's another J.
Oh yeah, John Johns.
Yeah,
That
Martian Manhunter.
How
that's
could you
a
forget that one? That's a good one.
pseudonym though, but no, I'm cheating. I'm not thinking of off the top of my head though. I'm pretty much when it comes to the X-Men, I'm pretty much like there really isn't any new ones that I like as much as the
Original.
older one from like the 70s and 80s mostly.
Uh-huh.
So like Mike mentioned, Nightcrawler would be one. Colossus would be one. Jean Grey would be the only
Starts with
one
a
from the
J.
original team.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Sort of. Well, I mean, yes, it, her first name does.
But... it's like John Jones.
Mm-hmm. Probably. Who did I say so far?
Wolverine.
No, I mean, it would have been Wolverine back in the day, but the extent of his overexposure over the years is kind of...
That's what knocked him down for me.
Yeah.
Overexposure.
They just kind
I try to think of them just from at their... Well, I mean, I shouldn't say that. I was going to say at their peak, but I mean, I honestly still really love that character. Love that character. I think after talking to Paul about it a little bit, it kind of reinvigorated my love for the character. And also, Chris, when you picked that Wolverine issue, that was...
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you're just talking about the character's continuity up to, like, the early 90s or something like that, you probably would be, but I don't really care for what they've done with the character since then.
Yeah.
Not all across the board, 100%, but... so, I mean, I'll leave him out just because he's so big. And I'll say...
He's not that big. I think he's only 5'2".
Well, we got a comedian on the show this week. Rogue and Psylocke.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I forgot Storm. I would have put Storm there. I love Storm.
Storm would be in my top 10. Mm-hmm. Storm's like a runner-up, and sometimes, but yeah, it's, I mean, it's all mostly
years and the years she had no power. And I don't know. I like all that stuff.
Yeah, I especially like Mohawk Storm.
And I even like when she was married to Black Panther. I like that. I like her a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe I forgot her. I mean, there for me, the top 10 is easier than the top 5.
Yeah.
Because it's harder to pick.
I like Kitty Pryde also.
Mm-hmm.
She's in my top 5 for sure.
So what's the difference between Kitty Pryde in your mind and Jubilee?
Jubilee's never had the depth that Kitty Pryde has, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
For a while there, Kitty was the heart and soul, in my opinion, of the X-Men.
I like... She came first, and I feel like Jubilee was kind of an attempt to make another her. And I think her power is cooler.
Yeah, I don't power, think there's any doubt about that, yeah.
Jubilee's power always was kind of boring to me, so... Yeah.
Interesting.
I don't know. I like some of the new mutants, but I think of them, a lot of them have like joined the X-Men eventually, but I think of them as new mutants more than X-Men.
Yeah. Who do you like on the new mutants? Who would be a couple of your favorites from the new mutants?
I think I like mostly the female characters, uh-huh. Magic and Danny and Rain.
Okay, yeah. I think I like, definitely Danny. You want to call her Mirage, or what was the other name that she had? Can't remember. There was a one after
Dawnstar,
that.
Dawnstar, or wasn't it?
Isn't that a Legionnaire?
What was her name?
Dawnstar, yeah.
Proudstar?
That's her last name.
Yeah, no, Dan.
Oh, gosh,
what the hell
Psyche.
Is that?
She was Psyche. First. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyhow, I like her, definitely. If you want to consider Magic a new mutant, I like her. And I don't know. I like Cannonball and Sunspot quite a bit, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cool team. I think that was one of the best jobs they ever did of creating new mutants. I mean, no pun intended. But of, like, adding on since this, you know, 70s with the first round of new ones, you know?
Yeah.
The all new Mexen.
Do you have the first appearance of Rogue in that Avengers annual?
Who, me?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Huh?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah, back in the, you know, years ago, because Rogue made my top five, and
that's why I asked.
But I learned that that was her first appearance. I got a long time ago. Got that issue a long time ago, just because I wanted to read that story.
I used to like Gambit a lot, but I've since lost interest.
Me too.
When I was a kid, and he was brand new, I liked him.
Yeah, he was definitely in my top five with Wolverine back in the day.
Times now I think changed. Of him.
Yeah.
Now I think of him as a character that really appeals to like 9-year-olds, 9-year-old boys.
And
a thief that throws cards and they explode.
Yeah, when a few months ago they started soliciting in previews X Classified, and they're going to reveal it on June 20th. And so I told my comic shop, "All right, save me an X Classified. I don't know what it's going to be next month. X Classified 2. I'm okay. Make sure you save that for me."
I thought it was 2 and 3, wasn't it?
It might have been
double ship.
Yeah, it could have been. But you know, so basically, I'm saying, you know, make sure you save one. And then I don't want to spoil it. Do you know what it is, Mike?
No.
Oh, okay. Then I'm not going to spoil
it. You can tell me. I don't care.
X-rated. Are you sure?
It's, well,
it's
right,
Uncanny so, X-Men. No,
I don't know. It's going to be a Rogue and Gambit series. So I'm like, is it too late for me to cancel? And they said no.
Well, that's...
Yeah,
said,
okay, I mean,
that's,
never mind.
That's kind of...
As much as I like
finished,
Rogue, I don't
they
like
just finished
Gambit.
One, right? They had a mini.
Yeah, they did a mini. Yeah, and now they have another one.
What's the actual title of the comic?
Well, I don't want to spoil it for Mike.
Gambit and what? Rogue.
No, it's not, but I don't want to spoil it. You gotta catch up on your X-Men reading.
It's a spoiler to say what the title is?
Yeah, I can whisper it to you.
X-Lovers?
Didn't they get married?
X-Cajun?
They got married.
All right, so fine. It's called Mrs. and Mrs. X.
Oh, yeah. My gosh, that's terrible.
It is, yeah.
That's a bad marketing ploy.
That's terrible. It is, because it's bad enough that with like pre-ordering, you have to a lot of times order 3 or 4 issues of a title, even when you know who the who's in it and stuff like
yes.
that. And they're like,
yes.
This is just a random like, and there's so many X-Men characters, like who the it could be anything, you know.
Well, you didn't even know what it was going to be. Yeah,
right. That's what I'm saying. So it's like even worse than normal, like to ask people to pre-order this thing.
That's
that
gonna be as upsetting as the wedding was for a lot of people.
Which wedding?
The Batman wedding.
Oh, I didn't know if you meant that or if you meant Colossus and Kitty.
No, I mean, people were going ballistic. I don't know if you saw, but...
The Batman one?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, is that
No, I muted it on Twitter because I only just read it on Thursday morning, so I didn't want to hear anything about it before that.
Yeah, just
is that still kind of a really
it.
Big spoiler? You know, I mean, is it still a pretty big spoiler for people to talk about it? Or?
I think so.
I mean, even
it?
Just the fact, no, I don't really read new stuff, so I don't really, I just found out what, I just spoiled it for myself because I'm not going to read it.
Oh, so you opened up the
But
the
it got
article.
Spoiled, I think the big, and one of the problems, right, is that it got spoiled before the issue was even released, like
I didn't,
a day
I didn't
or two
get,
before.
I didn't get spoiled, though.
No, neither did I, but
I
as
think
soon
it was,
as I heard that it was going to, it was in an article. It was,
well, it wasn't
think,
a day or two before, it was the week before.
Oh, okay.
It was
All
like
right.
a Thursday of the
yeah.
prior week. It was
and then
bad.
I guess
it was bad. It was a horrible
people
spoiler.
Were given
it wasn't like when Cap died. It wasn't like that where people the news released it like the day before. This was like way early.
Mm-hmm. And people were like blaming Tom King. As
well,
if he wanted
he is
it
writing
spoiled.
It.
But he doesn't want it spoiled.
Oh, I know
he
that.
He wants people to read the comic book.
No, it's like it's two different things. It was people were upset over the spoiler, and then people were upset over what it actually. It would have been the same reaction they had when they read it.
What happened? What happened that got them so angry?
What it's what
well,
didn't
I mean,
happen.
obviously at this point people realize we're talking about spoilers, but then I thought you said you read it.
I did. Wow. But I didn't read anything in there that would have incited me to start yelling at people. I think that it followed a logical conclusion based on what I know of both of those characters.
Let me tell you this, okay?
What comic book world are you in that people act logically, that fans act logically?
The idea of it is ridiculous. Like, mm-hmm. They couldn't even in continuity make it who's getting married.
Right.
Is it Bruce and Selina, or is it Batman and Catwoman? They left it vague, even though some of the preludes said it's Batman, Catwoman.
Yeah.
They flat out said it's Batman, Catwoman. But when they go get married, they're in their civilian identities. That's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the whole concept of it is just bad because they couldn't make up their mind. And I think they left it vague for a reason. And they kept on saying, like in the preludes, well, we can't have it Bruce and Selina, because then people will say, well, why would this rich billionaire marry this ex-con?
Right, that people know as Catwoman, right?
Yeah, but how would they even exist in a marriage then?
Right,
and not be seen with today's cell phones and shit. I mean,
if it had gone that way, I would have put down the book and you know, I can't say for sure, but I'd be like, I don't know if that feels. I mean, it might go for some interesting stories, but I don't think it would feel true to either character, especially really. Even Catwoman. So I really liked the way that it ended, and I loved the way that it set it up on that last page.
I'm interested to see what comes next. I think it would have been more interesting if Dr. Moon was standing there. Because he's mind-wiped her several times.
Yeah.
For the Joker.
But I thought it was interesting with Holly, because she's such a trusted confidant of Selina, that you know that this is how it's kind of wrapping up.
There had to be something deeper. I mean, there had to be, because Holly's not gonna like throw her decision with two freaking words. And Selina's the one that instigated it. She's the one that says, "Well, do you think of me as a hero?"
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
excuse me.
It was good. I liked it, but if you sit there and break it down, there's a lot of like why, you know. Mm-hmm. If you sit back and just try to enjoy it, it's much better read than if you try to break down the logic.
I think for me, as long as nothing is glaringly out of character for me personally, then I'm okay with it. I think that's probably true of a lot of people. You know, I mean, I think that some of the issues that you've had, you know, with the run is you sometimes, and maybe I'm saying this wrong, but I thought that maybe like they weren't really acting like you think they would act,
for me, it's not the way they act. It's the way they
talk. It's just the dialogue?
No, okay. Yeah. If you listen to the dialogue of the Joker and the Riddler, it's mm-hmm. all coherent and... When Batman speaks and Catwoman speak, they are incoherent and they can't even say a complete sentence. They just mumble to each other.
Bat, cat.
Yeah, just listen. Just read the dialogue out loud. That's all it takes. But you read the Joker stuff, like the Joker issues. It is awesome. Like it,
mm-hmm.
or Booster, or any of the stuff that I liked. It is just those two characters. When he dialogues them, it just that's my biggest complaint. It's not the plot.
Okay.
It's the dialogue of those two characters.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
See? Makes sense then.
Well, that's probably enough about a brand new comic on
I know, right?
Retro Podcast.
But
considering probably there's like 300 podcasts.
We've changed it to a week later. That's all.
It's retro.
It's retro. It's one week. It used to be 10 years, but the new policy is 1 week.
Well, you know what?
That's all for me, folks.
Pop culture changes. Hey, you could go farther than 1 week, Chris. Uh-huh.
Yeah. There's no limitation what you
right.
can
Well, I mean, that'll just give me more chances to take a nap. So you guys talk.
Don't
But
say
you are
that.
missing a lot of good shit, I'll tell you that. Whether you like to say it or not, there's some good stuff you're missing by
You
not being
still
clear.
have Marvel Unlimited or no, Chris?
Yeah, I think it's still active.
Yeah, but oh, you, so you're not even really utilizing it much?
Not lately.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I did a yearly subscription, so
yeah,
it's only like a few dollars a month.
Yeah. Don't they auto renew it though, unless you go in there and proactively say stop?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh, I'm gonna have to check that. When my I mean, I still have plenty of time, but when mine ends at the beginning of next year.
You'll all be digital by next year anyway.
You can do it anytime. Just set it so
never,
it doesn't auto-renew.
I'm going to do that. What do you think? What are you talking about? Are you talking about me, Mike?
Yeah.
I'm going to be digital?
Yeah, I'm just predicting the future.
Oh, my God. You're talking to the wrong person.
They're going to make a digital-first Jubilee exclusive, and then you'll move over entirely.
I'm the only person less digital than you.
You probably are. I like to read at night digitally.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. Well, I won't peel my codes. So there you go.
Yeah, but that's just wrong. I felt the same way
you're
you did.
Ruining all your 99s.
Nobody gives a shit.
Oh my God.
That's you're acting like you're gonna sell it. Like you're not.
My I'll be dead. My kids can sell all those 99s.
they won't care. They're gonna put it at a garage sale and say, "Get this box out of here. $20. Boom.
50 cents. 50 cents a buck.
Yeah.
Yeah. They won't take the time to like sell individual issues. They'll just be like, "David Adams, what do you want to give us for this whole lot?"
I won't die until I get an assurance from one or the other that they're going to properly sell those.
Well, that's what a will is. Last will and testament. Put it in there.
Yeah, I should. It's a good idea.
Like, it's a condition of them inheriting them is that they go about it that way.
Zach's getting pretty good with it already.
With what? Planning for your death?
Yeah. Hey, we all got to go sometime.
Jeez.
Unless you know something I don't.
No, that's just early for him.
Yeah, it's really early. It's pretty morbid to be doing that. I got you covered, Dad.
Right.
I will sell your X-Men for $100.
He had a comic shop news in his hand. Yeah, because I was reading through it, and then so it came apart, and he was holding half of it, and Allie was holding the other half, and he looked at me, and goes, "I can't crinkle this up." I go, "You can crinkle that up because that's just a newspaper." And then he got very excited and crinkled it up, but he knew enough that because it was a comic book size and stuff that he cannot be crinkling that. He thought it was a comic book, and he knew he couldn't crinkle that up. But I said, "No, that's just a newspaper, buddy."
Well, he got him trained.
And then he'll go into those old X-Men comics and he'll steal newspaper. And it's like, hey, it's the same material.
Yeah,
I can crinkle this up.
Newsprint. And then I'll come home one day and I'll have
a heart
attack.
Where do you get comic shop news from? Your comic store?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's some interesting things in that thing.
Do you not get it?
I do. I get it at the shop, too. I'm just curious. Yeah. I read the little Spider-Man comics.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, the newsprint.
Yep. So before we get into the book, should we take a moment of silence for Steve Ditko?
Sure.
All right.
That's funny that you said that just then because it had just a couple seconds before you said that it popped in my head because Mike said Spider-Man.
Yeah.
That he passed away.
Mike, and I got to tell you, we were watching a movie with the kids and we got them up to bed and I came downstairs. I just went on Facebook on my phone and you know how it just does it in any random order unless you sort it by, you know, most recent.
Yeah.
And your post just happened to be the front post. And as soon as you, when you were writing that, I'm like, oh, there's only one reason he's writing this stuff. And yeah. So sure enough, I did I changed it to recent. And it was just post after post after post.
Well, when you think about what he did for Spider-Man and Doctor Strange, that's probably the bulk of his work, but he did a lot for Charlton.
Yeah.
A lot. So he's like the founder of the Watchmen, if you look at it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a very strongly opinionated person who lived and created by a certain code that he felt very strongly about, and, you know, agree with it or don't agree with it, but he's stuck to that.
Yeah, I hear he's a kind of like a recluse.
He was very much, very much.
Matter of fact, the guy that used to work at IDW sent a thing to him, and he said, check out all these. I guess he contributed it to ROM. I wasn't sure. But
I heard that too.
Yeah, ROM comics, and the letter he wrote back to him was very strange. I don't even know how to take it. I had read it like 3 times. I'm like, what is he trying to say? I don't get it.
Well, I saw Bob Layton put something out and said that, you know, he had the honor to work with him for a time, and then during the time frame of when Tony was an alcoholic, they had very, very strong disagreements about that, because as far as you know, Ditko was concerned that that's a huge weakness in a character, or in character rather, not in a character, a weakness of character, not any type of a disease or anything like that. And so, you know, they argued about it, and, you know, they each stuck to their guns. And, you know, Bob Layton had said, you know, the thing about Steve Ditko is that he ended up respecting you more if you stuck to your beliefs, even if it wasn't the same as his, rather than you backing down. He actually had more respect for you, but for sticking up for your own belief.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's, you know, and I did a few years ago, I did read a Steve Ditko, but I mean, there's plenty of information in there in terms of writing, but I mean, it's an oversized book, and it's chock full of in just artwork and stuff. And I definitely recommend that book.
I think I own most of his DC stuff, like all of it.
Yeah.
And the Charlton stuff, I know I have the first Blue Beetle, the first Question.
You mean the first Ted Kord, or the first
Ted Kord?
Uh huh.
The other guy started off at Fox Comics. Garrett.
Dan Garrett. I remembered the Garrett part. I couldn't remember what the other part was.
Yeah, he's got the first Ted Kord, and then he did the Question, and then he did Captain Atom too. So. I don't have the first Captain Atom, though. I do own his what do you call it, the Charlton Characters archives.
No, I don't.
I said I do.
Oh, I thought you asked me if I did.
No, I own them. I own both of them.
Wow. I don't understand how Aaron Bell cannot appreciate that early.
I can.
Wow.
That guy's like, he doesn't understand things that I understand. Like, he's on a whole different level. Like, what bothers him, I might love. Like, me and him are opposites, I tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even in Sense of Humor, he says he doesn't laugh during Napoleon Dynamite, but I love that. I've watched Napoleon Dynamite, like, I don't know how many times.
Well, Ronnie told me that Aaron, he just doesn't like to laugh.
Yeah, it's like Daryl. Daryl's pretty. He's a pretty dark. Oh wow, the goat's playing on the kids' playset. Wow, I gotta take a picture of this.
Oh goodness.
Barb will get a kick out of this. Our next door neighbor's goat is in the kid's playset.
Wow, that's pretty crazy that you have goats next door.
It really blows my mind.
Huh. Did it take? Well, I'm filming video. What am I doing?
Oh, boy.
Well, I can't see him anymore. So, damn it. He's behind the window.
Should All we right. get into some comics?
Yeah. Why don't you kick us off? With okay, Batman well, number 50.
Yeah.
Batman 50.
I think we already covered that.
I want to talk to you later, Rob.
Okay.
About you, that.
About
yeah,
Batman.
You guys can have
you know how stupid I am? I'm like, why is he caught? What's so great about Batman 50? I'm thinking of the one that was probably like in 1942. Like, I forgot we just had an
well,
entire
it's
conversation
worth a lot more money.
I'm like, what did I miss?
I mean, slowest, nobody, right? nobody said you had to stay awake for this.
Yeah, no, that's right.
But so,
what
I
do you
have a
got
decent...
original Batman 50 for us.
No, I wasn't...
1948.
My ability to foresee your conversation was not...
Wow.
Not working this morning, apparently.
Batman 50 has Two-Face on it. It's the return of Two-Face.
Go for it. I mean, if you want to talk about
that, should actually be a big deal to you, then, Rob.
It is a huge deal, and for some reason, this one seems like it's priced much lower, at least according to the database, than a lot of the other comic books around it. So,
well, it's a conservative database; you can't really trust it.
I know, but I'll take a look.
But if you use it as like a starting point, it's a good. It's good for that.
That's right.
So go ahead. Chris.
Yes, I'm not going to interrupt you anymore, Chris.
Okay, well, I have a fairly decent transition from, not from Batman 50, but from something else you were just talking about. And one of the things I read was Blue Beetle number 14. Ooh. The, you know, the 87, early or late 80s series. And this is by Len Wein and Paris Cullins, of course. It's called The Phantom of Pago Island. And, you know, Len Wein really had the ability to do the nice.
What issue was this again?
14.
14, okay, thanks.
Well, it's P-A-G-O, so.
That's what I thought.
Pago, yeah, it could be like Pago, Pago, Pago.
Pogo. Pago. I don't know.
Pago.
Go ahead.
So, you know, Len Wein is real good at that. Style of having various plots going on, and that this series is definitely a good example of that. And this is picking up. There was a little bit of a crossover with New Teen Titans, where the Hybrid, which is a group that's kind of like a grotesque version of the Doom Patrol created by Mento. Changeling's stepfather kind of crossed over into Blue Beetle because one of Blue Beetle's I think employees got named Kurt. He got stuck in this Prometheum metal and his helicopter his ambulance on the way to the hospital was hijacked by Mento, and they transformed him into a member of his Hybrid. And so it was kind of crossover there. And this is picking up from there where Beetle is at Titan's Tower, and they're helping him. He's using their facilities and their help to make repairs to his bug a lot quicker than he'd be able to on his own. And so they say their goodbyes, and he goes to head back to work because he's been away from his job at Cord Industries for a really long time because of all these events. Meanwhile, something that's been going on in the background really since the beginning of the series involves Pago Island, and there is a Chicago police lieutenant, Maxwell Fisher, who has been investigating the death of Dan Garrett.
Oh,
the previous Blue
Look
Beetle.
At that, huh?
Yeah.
Cool.
So this is actually, I mean, this little bits of this storyline have been going on since the beginning of this series.
Since number and, one, essentially.
Yeah, pretty much, because it ties back into Ted Kord's origin. And Lieutenant Fisher has been investigating, and he's on a he's on his own free time, and he's hired up like a little steamboat type deal with a crew, and who's the crew? It's like there's a bit of a tension with their relationship because they seem like they're kind of skeptical of his goals, but then they catch sight of Pago Island, which some of them believe to be cursed, and sure enough, like they collide with what they think is a reef, but you see in a panel underwater the shadow of like a humanoid type figure before the boat basically capsizes. But they're close enough to the island that they can recover some of their supplies and like they set off on the island, and pretty soon, like one of the guys goes to the radio room on the island on like the facilities there, and there's a shadowy, it's humanoid, but you can tell it's like robotic or something because it's got a lot of sharp angles to the figure, and sure enough, like all you see is a shadow, but sure enough, the other guys come in, and the radio is smashed, and it's real kind of good about, like, there's a lot of violence that happens from this point on, but it's all off screen, like, so to speak, or off panel. The robot or whatever it is kills the guy that went in to use the radio, but they talk about how the sight's not very pretty, but you just see his legs, like, sticking up from off panel in no, like, blood or violence or anything like that. But so obviously they're like the rest of the crew that brought Fisher there aren't too happy at this point. But the lieutenant gives kind of a pep talk, like he's there to solve the mystery of a murder of Dan Garrett. But if they help him, maybe they can solve two murders at this point. So they're skeptical, but he manages to convince them to stay. We see them kind of like separate in pairs. And another man gets tracked down in the forest by this being that's stalking them, which is still kind of mostly off panel. So we flip back to Chicago, and there's like a sequence where we kind of just like slice of life kind of with Ted Kord showing back up to work for the first time in a long time, and his assistant really getting on his case for his absenteeism and all the things that he's neglected, and you know, telling him he needs to buck up and help, some other side plot type stuff that connects into his ongoing life and attempts to both run his business and be the Blue Beetle. But eventually he actually goes downtown to the police office and he goes there to talk to Fisher for something that's unrelated to the whole Pago Island thing. But when they find out, he finds out that Lieutenant Fisher has taken some time off, he's got a map of Pago Island there that clues in Blue Beetle to what he might be up to. Because he's had indications before that Fisher was concerned about Dan Garrett, but until this moment, he wasn't really, he didn't really know that he was so focused on it to go to the extent of actually going there. So he knows that that kind of connects to his secrets, and so he's in a rush to kind of get there himself. And we get, for new readers, we get a little bit of a flashback to the origins. Like, originally, you know, Ted Kord went there with Dan Garrett, who transformed into the Blue Beetle. And he passed on the legacy of the Blue Beetle, but he wasn't able to pass on the Scarab that he uses for his powers. So that's why Ted has been just using technology to try to do that. So Ted arrives on the island, and he finds a lot of dead people, a lot of people killed. And there's just one guy he comes across who's only got some cracked ribs and a concussion, and takes him on the bug. But the guy's not too much help because he's still so, like, terrified and kind of hallucinating. So Ted heads back to the island, and he ends up coming across Fisher. And so they talk about the fact that Fisher's there, and it's not exactly part of his regular Chicago beat. But obviously, like, things have gone very wrong, and Fisher's just trying to survive and track down whatever it is that's killed everybody. And so at that moment, at the end of the issue, we finally get a good look at what that is. Is it kind of crashes through a cliff wall next to where they're standing, declaring that it is Carapax, the indestructible man. And you will be screaming my name as I slay you, he says. But he's like a big, he says he's a man, but it remains to be seen how much of a man, because he just looks like a big giant robot in humanoid form. Red, and mostly red and little bits of orange. So, but yeah, this has definitely been a quality series from the beginning. You know, it's got that great kind of like 80s, 70s and 80s style of just keeping the different plots going. And this is pretty satisfying since it's been, you know, so long since that this one has been in the background. So.
Yeah, plus you got Cullen's on art, and it's awesome.
Yeah.
It draws those nice big bug eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's definitely a really good fit for this book, his style, I think.
Yeah, I like it a lot. I like the cover to this one because he has his little gun like a Western comic. You know how you see those Westerns where they're like, they like hit the trigger so they could keep firing?
I like
he's
it
got
too.
His light gun there.
Yeah, he's not playing around on that cover.
Yeah, it's very Westernish.
Yeah. I like it. Very cool.
Yeah, he was one of my favorite artists at the time, for sure.
Nice.
Do you want to go next, Rob?
Oh, sure. I'm going to start out today with a movie, if you don't mind. Last night, I don't know if you guys have seen it, we watched... Or actually, I watched Humanoids from the Deep from 1980. And have either one of you watched this movie before?
The name is familiar, but I don't think I've actually seen it.
So I was watching just as background.
I think they made a comic book of this.
Did they?
I think Blue Water did. It sounds familiar.
Well, I was watching just in the background one of those... like 50 horror movies that you've like best horror movies that you've never seen. Mm-hmm. One of those types of compilation type things. And, boy,
I was right.
Mike, when you're right, Mike, you're right, huh?
That's because I own it. I read it.
one issue.
Yeah.
Two covers.
I was like, this sounds familiar because I remember reading it and thinking, oh, I should watch the movie.
That's pretty funny.
Because it's Roger Corman, that's why.
Yeah.
You know what you're getting when you go with Roger Corman. I mean,
no, but this one wasn't directed by him. The movie itself was not directed by him.
But it's produced by him.
Oh, okay.
And what you know what his financial budgets are.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll tend to look past things.
This is the description. Scientific experiments backfire and produce horrific mutations, half man, half fish, which terrorize a small fishing village by killing the men and raping the women. So what it turns out is that this is a fishing village, and they fish for salmon, and it's starting to dry up. There hasn't been a lot of fish out there for people to catch. People are on hard times. This cannery company is going to come along, and they're going to start a factory there. And as part of their plan, they have a scientist working there that has found a way to basically get the salmon to multiply, to actually grow to adulthood in, like, maybe, you know, 10 times as fast as what it normally would take. So their idea is they'll be able to get a lot more fish fully grown, and everyone will be happy. But of course, this thing backfires, and rather than just growing, they also grow leaps and bounds through, like, the evolutionary food chain. So they become humanoid, and they have, like, these big brains, but they've got these long arms with claws and these huge sharp teeth, and just like real salmon. So they're at the beginning of this. You know, it puts you really right into it, where these humanoids are already fully formed and are starting to prey on people. As a matter of fact, at first it kills some dogs off screen, and I don't remember any of the characters' names, but well, actually I have it up in front of me. So the main character's name is Jim. And his wife is Carol. The one character I do remember is Johnny Eagle. He's the Native American that the rest of the town, rest of the men who fish, are all against, except for the main character, Jim. And Johnny Eagle is played by Anthony Pena, who of course is not Native American. He's Hispanic. So have this Hispanic man playing a Native American man. And basically, his point of view is they've overfished and so on and so forth. He doesn't trust the cannery, and he wants to. They're looking to sue the town to get, you know, their native land back. So that's like a side plot that's not developed at all. But for the movie itself, I have to say, I mean, like you said, Mike, it's, you know what quality of budget you're getting and so forth, but it still was an entertaining movie. But by far, like I said, it starts out just showing you little bits and pieces of these monsters, and then you know, some people start getting killed, and this one girl, she is attacked by one of the creatures, and then you don't see what happens to her. And then later they find her covered up in, like, seaweed, and she's still alive. So they bring her back to safety. By the end, it's a full blown, they're having a carnival, seaside, and there's a full blown attack of these half fishmen just rampaging throughout the town. And the main character, Jim, and Johnny Eagle, and even the scientist, the female scientist from the cannery company, are all working together to kill these creatures. And by the end, they're successful and they kill them all off, and it's kind of like, okay, they're looking through town and the town is just devastated and stuff, but they've managed to kill off the creatures and they can move forward. But they're looking for the female scientist and they can't find her anywhere. She seemed to have just up and disappeared. So then at the very end, it cuts to her helping the younger woman who had been attacked give birth. And she's, you know, telling her to push. And instead, suddenly her stomach rips open. And of course, it's one of the humanoid creatures. And then that's the end of the movie. It was a fun movie to watch. There was one particular part that, I mean, there was a lot of different parts that were just funny intentionally or not, but one in particular, there's a couple out on the beach in just on the middle of the beach in a tent, and the guy has brought his ventriloquist dummy and is using it and throwing his voice and stuff, and I think that you both know, you know, what a seductive thing that is to women, those ventriloquist dummies. And it's certainly working for this guy, because he's pretending to be the dummy, telling his girlfriend, "Oh, take off your clothes," or stuff like that. And she's just she can't get naked quick enough.
Oh, she's attracted to that.
There's no better aphrodisiac than a
dummy. Mike. What are you talking about?
Exactly. She wants to be assured that she's not going to get any splinters, and he assures her that he's been sanded down, and then like immediately upon that, you know, one of the creatures like rips open the tent and attacks and kills both of them. But it was just so funny that it's like seriously, this is how, you know, he's gonna.
That's why you watch those girlfriend movies.
Is with, I know that it, me too. That's what I'm saying. It's just really enjoyable. So a high quality movie this is not, but a very enjoyable movie nonetheless. I had fun watching it, and it's a short movie. It's like an hour and 20 minutes. You know, you don't want one that's overly long, obviously, when it's one of these types of movies. But it was a lot of fun to experience, because I've never seen it before. So I recommend it if you guys want just a cheesy, 80s Roger Corman movie. This is definitely one to check out.
It's free on Prime. So
yeah,
maybe I'll check it out.
Yeah. So that's all I got for on the movie front.
So Rob, did you ever find your Teen Titans 100 page giant?
No.
Mm-mm. Ah.
I was thinking today, this afternoon, we have to go grocery shopping. Maybe we would stop real quick and check. I went to the other Walmart yesterday. No, not yesterday. On Thursday, the opposite one. I was telling you we have two in the area.
Yeah.
And it was just the display there. They did not have one comic book at all left.
I went to three stores in New Mexico, and there's no sign of them, so I don't even know if they get them there. But they have an aisle full of pinatas, so that might take the take away from the collector's aisle.
Yeah, I heard that it was like 3,000.
You can buy all like 5,000. I was like, why doesn't my Walmart have pinatas like this?
I don't think ours has any pinatas.
Yeah, we have a whole aisle dedicated to that. So
we have to go to Party City if we want a decent
thing out of it. There were no comic books at Walmart.
No comic books at all.
Why I mentioned it is I started reading the Teen Titans 100 page comic giant from Walmart. So it had originally a new story, like 14 pages of a new story. And then it had the Geoff Johns, Mike McCone Teen Titans number one, where Cyborg puts out the call to form the Titans and basically be a mentor with Changeling and Starfire. And this opens up with in Smallville, where they're Ma and Pa Kent are actually driving Connor to school, high school, for the first day. And Connor has no desire to show up to school. Like he's like, why am I wasting time? And he just skips school as much as he possibly can. And Superman finds him flying in the fields, and he's like, "Hey, you really need to go to school. You need to learn." And he's like, "I'm above that. I don't need to learn. I have these superpowers. I might as well use them." And he tells him, "Well, they're forming the Teen Titans. Maybe you should join." And he goes, mm-hmm. "What? On weekends? I go to school during the week, and then you want me to be part of this group and then watch us? Like, you'll be watching over our shoulders at anything we do." And he says, "Nope, I'm going to give you your privacy with this this time." And he says, "You need to go back to school." And then the same thing happens with Tim. As Tim is taking down Tweedledee and Tweedledum, Batman's talking him into joining the Teen Titans. And the other one is Flash. The Wally one's the most interesting because Wally's talking to Jay. And this time Jay is being his mentor. This isn't Max Mercury, believe it or not, even though it doesn't look like Jay. I always think of Jay as having... Oh, no, this is Max Mercury. Never mind. Hmm. Now I'm not confused. So this is Max Mercury, and he's the mentor to Impulse at the time. And Wally's saying, "You know, they're forming this Teen Titans. I don't think you should be part of it." He thinks it's a bad idea. And Max is saying, "I think you should be." And meanwhile, Impulse is actually hearing all this. Like, he's hearing their discussion. And he kind of feels bad because he doesn't have the approval of Wally at all. Like, he doesn't believe in him. As a matter of fact, he says that. He just doesn't know how much I believe in him. As he flat out says it. Mm-hmm. But he's gonna join the Titans as well. And this happens, I think this happens during, like, right after Young Justice, and right, there was, like, a crossover with something, and somebody, Donna Troy died.
With JLA, I think.
Yeah, Donna Troy ended up dying. Yeah. So there's, like, mm-hmm. a hesitation because of that death to reform this team.
Yeah, it led into this book and Outsiders.
Yeah.
It was like the Superman robot went berserk and
Indigo. Oh, wasn't it Indigo?
Well, I think she was one of them, or like
she betrayed them.
Are they like they created her out of it or something like that? Yeah. But, yeah.
So this follows that, and then Cassie is with her mom getting kicked out of or being expelled from her school in Gateway City. And she talks about plagiarism and all this stuff that her daughter can't be in. And Cassie destroys the desk that the counselor's on, which doesn't lead to anything good. And she finds out she's being recruited by Starfire because Wonder Woman doesn't think she should be in the team either, which is very interesting. So you have Wally and Wonder Woman not wanting to their proteges to join the Teen Titans, but Starfire's there for her, and she recruits her into the league where they'll meet on the weekends. And it's creepy, at least to me it is, that Beast Boy seems to be hitting on Cassie, because I always think of Beast Boy as being the youngest of the Teen Titans, but older than this group of Teen Titans.
Right, yep, me too.
So yeah.
It's a little bit disturbing that he's talking to her, like, sexually.
I remember rereading this not that long ago, and I had the same reaction. Like, Johns was trying to continue, like, Beast Boy's characterization of being, like, girl crazy, but it kind of, like, the age difference made it seem kind of...
creepy.
Off.
Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. And so she gets recruited, and everybody seems very standoffish. Like, Bart wants to hug everybody, and they're like, step off kind of thing. And the big thing here is Connor. One thing I really liked about this run of Teen Titans is it formed a bond between Superboy and Robin that was pretty strong, and also had the relationship with Cassie and Connor. And you can kind of see the foundations of that here as Connor runs into Robin, and Robin's kind of checking his emails on certain things, and he starts, he says, oh, I know that you're 50% Kryptonian and 50% human, and the big thing out of this issue is that the spoiler at the end of it is his other donor for Connor is Lex Luthor. So that's it like, yeah, lets you know in the first issue that he's part evil and part good, which is interesting.
Yeah.
And he's always had throughout this series that conflict. They even have, I think it's later in the series where he's conflicted on whether he should be more like Luthor or more like Superman. But mm-hmm. here he's definitely more Superman than he is Luthor. But he's pretty shocked to find out that his other donor is Lex Luthor. But it was a good reread. And I dig these 100-page giants because they're just like an historic callback to the way they were, like when we used to get them in the 70s. And that's when I was buying them. So it's the same format, except the reprints are in the future. I
guess. Yeah, I'm... Like I said, today maybe we'll go back to that other one and I'll see if they restocked. Because obviously that other location hadn't restocked at all when I went on Thursday.
Yeah. What makes me mad is I was gonna go to Albuquerque and see if I can find some. Mm-hmm. And then just sell them for cover because those speculators piss me off. They just piss me off. And I just wanted to undercut them and just sell them for cover and let somebody get copy if they want to get a copy. Because they're hoarding them. You can see them. And one guy says he's got like 10 copies of Teen Titans. And it's like he's selling them for whatever he wants. It bugs the shit out of me.
Well, it does me too, but at the same time, it bugs me just as much that people are actually buying them for those prices from people. If everyone just agreed, I'm not paying $20 for these books, they'd have no choice but to lower the price down. You know what I mean? But it's like you got people out there that actually pay these because they need it now. They need to have it right now. You know?
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know what their restock policy is, to tell you the truth. So maybe
I don't either.
Maybe they're not going to restock until the next batch comes out. I don't.
And that's that's possible. They're not in the comic book selling business, you know. So who knows? Might be just okay. We got these in. They're gone. Okay, they're gone. And then when new stock comes in, when the new issue comes in, then we'll release that. But yeah, you might be right. Who knows?
I just know I like them. Like, I think they're really well put together books. I'd be curious to see, though, like, somebody who hasn't read comic is probably not going to buy it. But if they did buy it, how they would feel about it, because it's all over the place. In other words, it's from different time periods. Mm-hmm. Whereas you read a 100-page giant, it's kind of like a build-up. But in this one, you get like current Teen Titans with the new story, and then you get the Geoff Johns story, and then you get Super Sons. So it's like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do you adjust? Because you have, well, in this case, you have three different Robins, two different Superboys. I mean, it's not the same character. Like, how would you read about Connor and then switch to Superman and Lois's son?
No, you're right.
Jonathan, you're all of a sudden you're back in. And you're like, well, how does this guy do with that? And then you just finished reading Tim, and now you're reading Damian.
Yeah.
It's like, what? So I know where it is because I've read all these books.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fun book.
That's a good one. Oh, you know what? I wanted to mention something before you go to the next thing, Chris, is that I forgot to mention in the movie, it's, you know, all no-name people except for Vic Morrow, and I couldn't remember where I heard that name from. He played the he played the bad, you know, the quote unquote bad guy. He was the guy that was most against the Native American character in this movie. But Vic Morrow is the guy that died in real life in that accident that happened in the Twilight Zone movie.
Oh.
He was the actor that died. Mm-hmm. And he's also I didn't know this. He also was father to Jennifer Jason Leigh, which I didn't know that either. But anyhow, he was the only name that I recognized, and I couldn't remember why. And then it occurred to me. I looked it up to make sure I was right, and yeah, he's the one that had died in that helicopter accident. So anyhow,
yeah, it sounds familiar. Like I read it at some point, but I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Cool.
You got anything else there, Christopher?
Yeah, so I got something a little bit different here. I'm going to talk about the first story in the Bat manga. So this came out a little while ago. It's by Jiro Kuwata, and it was kind of rediscovered maybe like about a decade ago by Chip Kidd, who wrote a book about this Batman manga that was written and published in Japan in the 60s when you know, the Batman fever was so big, I guess it was big enough to be of interest in Japan. And a little while ago, DC published three collections of this. So I read the first story in the first volume.
Where did you get a hold of this? At the library?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So the first story is called Lord Deathman. I think a lot of them, well, no, maybe not, but this one obviously is named after like the main villain. Yeah, definitely. Like it has like a style, like manga style from like the 60s. Like other, like older, like it kind of like you could compare it sort of to look of like Speed Racer or something like that, in terms of like the characters' faces and stuff. But it starts out with Bruce
Wayne. I think
Wayne
Morrison
and,
plays with that character in Batman.
Yeah, didn't he
bring
Lord Deathman in? Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's in black and white. And it starts off with Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson are at a jewelry show where they're showcasing Gotham's like most spectacular gems. So they show off. This woman shows off this gem of fire ruby. It's kind of some funny humor when it starts off, because like there's this woman that's sitting near them and she says, "Wow, it's so gorgeous. You should buy it now, Mr. Wayne." He says, "Oh, you must be joking." And Dick says, "If Bruce bought jewelry for every woman who talked to him, he'd be broke in no time." And she says, "Oh my, this boy certainly has a mouth on him." And Dick says, boy, why you old hag?"
Whoa.
She says, "What old hag? Well, I never." And then Bruce tells them both to settle down. But then the lights go out and there's like laughter from the darkness, and it's a pretty cool like effect, the way like the page looks. There's these like what looks like skeletons up above near the ceiling, and one of them introduces himself as Lord Deathman. He's like, "If anyone tries to make a move, you get a taste of this." And he like shoots off the gun that he's holding. So basically, he like steals the jewels, and Dick asks, like, "What are we gonna? Aren't we gonna do something?" And Bruce says, "Well, we gotta hold on. If we try something now, the audience is gonna get hurt." So after Lord Deathman takes off, like, okay, let's make our move, and the lights come back on, and they realize, like, besides Lord Deathman, the other skeletons that seem to be with them were just black. It was just black cloth with phosphorescent paint of the skeletons on there, and they couldn't tell in the dark. So Dick and Bruce suit up as Batman and Robin and go pursue Lord Deathman. They before they catch up with them, Deathman like takes out a policeman and gets in his getaway car. But Batman and Robin are able to like get ahead by like going on the rooftops and stuff and jump down in front of the car. Lord Deathman says, "I don't care who that is, that it's Batman, just run him over." Bruce throws a batarang through the windshield and then jumps up on top of the car before it hits him. With the glass shattering and stuff, the driver drives the car into the wall. They start shooting their rifles at them. Robin throws a batarang and as a distraction and like knocks the guns out of their hands, and they make it into a fist fight. But Lord Deathman's getting away while they fight his goons. So Robin says, "Leave the goons to me, and you go after Lord Deathman." So Batman pursues them and is able to lasso, use a bat lasso kind of thing to grab him by the foot and then string him up on like a light pole. So that's where it becomes kind of interesting, where Lord Deathman just starts cracking up, and he says, "You think this means you got me?" And Batman tells him not to be a sore loser, but nothing really happens then. He's brought. So we jump to like when he's in court, and some of the people in the court audience like, "What the heck's up with why has he still got his costume on?" And they say, "Well, that's the weird thing. They can't seem to get it off of him." So he's sentenced to death, and Lord Deathman just starts cracking up. He's like, "You'd think you can execute me? I'm already dead." And so like the bailiff goes to grab a hold of him to get him under control, and then he just goes limp and collapses. And the bailiff checks him, and he's like, "He's dead. He's like, his pulse is gone. He's not breathing." So Batman and Robin hear about this on the news, and like, "Well, we don't believe it." But sure enough, they actually bury him. Well, that night, Batman has what he thinks is a nightmare of Lord Deathman haunting him. So they're actually like, we could probably use a vacation. How about we take a trip to Jamaica? So they're in Jamaica, and like Bruce is like stretched out on the sand, and Robin is like scuba diving or something. But then they hear like on the radio that Lord Deathman, who's supposed to be dead, has reappeared and murdered again. So they rush back to Gotham City, thinking that it must be like an imitator or something. But they get like a helicopter and track him down, and it sure enough looks like Lord Deathman. So they eventually catch up with them and like have another fight. There's like a lot of action in terms of like Batman. It's like some kind of construction area, so Batman like gets on a wrecking ball after Robin shoots out a smoke pellet and comes flying and like crushes the car that they're in. So Batman goes to unmask him and, you know, see who he is, and thinking that he's an imitator. But like before, he's not able to unmask him. And like before, Lord Deathman says, well, see you on the other side. And then he just collapses and dies. So, you know, basically the same thing happens. They bury him again in the same grave. And once again, that night, Batman has what he thinks is a nightmare about Lord Deathman returning. So the next day, I think, they go to a party from the guy that had Mr. Starr, who had held the jewelry show. So Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson show up, and they have a special presentation for entertainment. It's this like guy from India, and like they bury him alive, and he's underground for over an hour. You know, and Bruce knows that that's way too long. That all the air will be gone from the like box that he's in by then, and they dig him back up, and he looks like he's kind of out of it, or that he's just kind of like leaning against the side of the box. It's like it's a glass box, so they can see him. But then all of a sudden he starts moving and steps out and is smiling, and he explains that he used a secret yoga method, to slow his breathing and stop his heartbeat. And so, you know, the connection's kind of obvious. Bruce says, you know, that must be it. Like, that must be what Lord Deathman is doing. So they go to his grave, but he's one step ahead of them. He's already gotten out of the grave. And there's actually a note in there addressed to Batman, knowing that he would come, and he's standing on the cliffside behind him. So it's all of a sudden some of the tombstones nearby shift back, and some of his goons come out of the graves with guns and start shooting at them. Batman actually gets hit, gets shot, and Lord Deathman starts taunting Robin. You know, Batman's not an immortal. He can't come back from the dead. But all of a sudden, Batman jumps up and lassos a nearby tree and uses it as leverage to attack some of the goons. So he was kind of playing dead as well. So they get back in the Batmobile and use that as kind of for some leverage to get around the area and deal with all the goons. Robin takes the wheel, and it's kind of a cool panel, or a cool, actually, like a large page where Robin's driving the Batmobile, and Batman's swinging off of the Batmobile from a rope, like through the air and hitting a whole bunch of the goons. So once they're all knocked out, Lord Deathman has gotten in a helicopter and is taken to the skies. And he launches a bomb at the Batmobile, so they have to get out of the way as quick as possible. Robin shoots a smoke screen out of the Batmobile, and it starts drifting up into the sky, so it makes it difficult for Lord Deathman to fly. He's got to focus on trying to get out of the smoke cloud so he can see, but because he can't see, he ends up flying the helicopter right into power lines, and the helicopter explodes because it like set off the other bomb that he had on the helicopter. So that's pretty much the end, like the end of Lord Deathman, because he, you know, didn't just collapse into his act of death, but he explode in a helicopter for real. But at this point, Robin notices that Batman slumped against the steering wheel and that he actually got shot for real, but it just hit him in the shoulder. So he's hurt, but he'll be all right. So they head back basically to take care of his bullet wound, and that's the end of the story. But it was actually, it was really neat. Like considering when it was originally published, it's definitely a more mature story than American Batman comics were at the time. Like even though it was inspired by the popularity of the Batman TV show, the Batman TV show in America had the effect on Batman comics to make them like really a lot like less serious and a lot more kiddie. And like even though Lord Deathman is like sounds like sounds like a translated name, and it sounds kind of like that.
Sounds silly.
It sounds silly, but like the actual, you really have like criminals shooting guns and the villain seeming to die at the end of the story, and it's a lot more serious in tone than something American at the time. So it was pretty cool. I enjoyed it. I'm looking forward to checking out some of the other stories in the volume. So
I've heard of it.
Something a little different.
I think I heard it in a podcast. Somebody was talking.
Well, they solicited
a lot previews. About it.
Yeah, I remember it coming out.
I chose not to get it just because of. Do you read it backward to forward too?
You read the panels in reverse order.
No, but just start at the back of the
not
book
the and... way that the digital is anyways.
Oh.
You know, I don't know.
Oh, you read it digitally?
I read it digitally, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So maybe because it's digital. Yeah. So maybe because it's digital, you don't read it that way, but I don't know. Like I've read some other manga recently, I got used to it pretty quickly. So yeah, you start from like the top right corner and
do you stand on your head when you read it?
No. It's really not that different.
You read all your comic books like that.
It's not upside down. Yeah, I've always been reading my comics like from back to front, right to left, and now
and they've never made sense until this story.
Never made sense until now.
That's pretty funny. I like that.
Yeah, it was cool to see like an American comic book hero. And I don't know if I would have liked it as much if it was like Batman in manga style of today. Even though there isn't like one manga style, but I liked like the 60s style of it as well. So
that's cool. I've never experienced that at all.
Well, there's always tomorrow.
Well, I experienced through you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Vicarious.
Yeah. I mean, I learn a lot from the two of you. You know?
Yeah.
We learn a lot from each other.
How to be confident in your love for Jubilee.
Stick to my guns.
Mm-hmm. Don't back Steve down.
That's right. Steve Ditko has more respect for me if I stick to my guns that Jubilee's in the top three of my favorite characters.
Yep. He won't. Right. I'm sure he wouldn't agree with you, but
he'll I'm sure he respect you for definitely. Your... He definitely wouldn't agree with me. Shall I cover my next one?
Yep.
Sure.
All right. So let's talk about Iron Man number 98. From 1977. Bill Mantlo was the writer. George Tosca was the artist. Don Perlin was the inker. What we have here is you're kind of thrown into the not the action, but it seems like it was the aftermath of something going on. Tony is working on a new set of armor, and he's been trying to get it prepared so he can start wearing it. Something has happened to his heart again that's made it very, very weak. And once again, he's going to need to wear the armor just to keep him alive. So as you guys know, that had been the story with him originally. And then he didn't need it to keep himself alive anymore. But something has just recently happened, and which is not explained here, and that he's gonna. So he's building a new set of armor, and his heart's dangerously weak. He also has the guardsman suit of armor in the room with him. If you guys are familiar with that, that's that green, all green armor. You guys remember the guardsman?
Yeah, they used to guard Project Pegasus.
Yeah, yeah,
like that. Marvel 2-in-1 and stuff.
At this point, in this early point, it seems like it's just one suit of armor that that brothers had worn, the O'Brien brothers, and one had gone mad wearing it, and now the second one has recently attacked Iron Man wearing the armor, and he has Michael O'Brien under sedation in the room as well. Something has basically made him go crazy. So as he's waiting for this to, for this armor to be ready for him, he ends up getting called upon by, two Japanese, business people. They're going to be doing business with his Stark company, and, he's supposed to show him around, but as he's not feeling well, he asks if his secretary can have one of the people there give them a tour of the plant, and so that they go off to do that, and Tony stays in his lab. So they show one of the employees, it looks like just a regular security guard, giving the tour of these two Japanese business people and talking about solar energy. And this is the type of advancement that they're interested in to bring back to Japan. And then when we cut back to Tony, Michael O'Brien has woken up, and they're arguing with each other because he's still just kind of has gone mad. And is very angry with irrationally angry with Tony Stark, and he wants his armor back and so on and so forth, but he's sedated and tied up. So they've given a hint based on the cover that in this issue is the Living Inferno Sunfire. So of course, sure enough, Sunfire, as he's been portrayed pretty much throughout his history, he's flip-flopped back and forth between a superhero and a person that is just very irrationally for Japan and against every other country in the world. So he's very angry that these two business people are going to do business with an American company, and he doesn't want that to happen. He considers Tony Stark a criminal, and he considers these two traitors. So he starts blowing up the place. And so Tony has no choice, but he needs to confront Sunfire. So he runs out of the room, and he goes to some area. He's actually looking in closets for old suits of armor that were unmodified that could help his heart. And when he goes and looks, they're all gone. So everything is missing. Somehow all of them have flown the coop, and he doesn't know why. So instead, he puts on the guardsman uniform, knowing that that's not going to be able to help his heart, but knowing that somebody needs to do something. And it just has the basic powers similar to an Iron Man outfit, but without being able to help his heart. So he flies up and starts attacking Sunfire. Now, they explain that Sunfire and Iron Man had been allies recently against the Mandarin. So he has that going for him, except for the fact that, of course, he's in the guardsman uniform and he can't explain that he's really Iron Man. So they start fighting each other, and it's overtaxing his heart to a great extent. And Sunfire is wiping the floor with him. So finally, he really can't take it anymore. He has to go because his heart is just racing and it's starting to fail him. So in the meantime, Michael O'Brien is watching this on a closed camera TV screen, and now his memories are coming back to him that he's like, wait a minute, this Tony Stark put this on. He's got a bad heart, and he's fighting for everyone here, and this is the man that I've been hating on. And he's like, this is ridiculous, and he kind of snaps out of it. Also, Tony had, as he was putting on the guardsman uniform, indicated that since he's not predisposed to being to going insane, that he won't have any problems with wearing the guardsman outfit like the O'Briens had. So anyhow, as Jasper Sitwell is a liaison to Stark Industries, and he comes busting into the room just as O'Brien is putting on the now completed Iron Man outfit to go help Tony. So the guards, Tony Stark as the guardsman, gets away just as O'Brien as Iron Man starts attacking Sunfire. So Tony Stark just basically is under rubble, and he crawls away, and he gets back into the building of Stark Industries. He's like, he remembers that he has one more suit of armor that's hidden away in a different location. Hopefully that's not gone. And he checks, and it's not. So there's a mysterious figure actually there telling him to hurry up and put it on. But they don't indicate who it is, although it appears that it's definitely a woman, and I'm guessing that it's Madame Mask based on what she says, but it's only a two panel thing. And then it moves onward. So Iron Man, O'Brien is fighting Sunfire and ends up being teleported away somehow, and they don't explain what exactly is going on other than that Sunfire has seen that teleportation beam before. And so O'Brien disappears, and Sunfire says Iron Man is gone, and then the last panel is Tony Stark now in his older Iron Man uniform, the one where the yellow part of his faceplate is like at the top is that V, and it's got kind of like those bands of red in the space of the V. Do you guys know what I'm talking about? That older suit of armor. So yeah. He's wearing that, and he's like, no, you're mistaken. I'm here now. This is the original Iron Man. And so it leads to the next issue, where there's going to be a full out real battle with Tony in an Iron Man outfit against Sunfire. But that's how this one ends. So overall, it was it was enjoyable. I actually was inspired to read. I've got a handful of older Iron Man issues, just miscellaneous issues that I've picked up in the past couple of years that I haven't gotten to. And I saw that Ross on Twitter has been reading some Iron Man, and so it made me want to pick this one up. And so I read this one, and I'll probably continue to read the next. I've got maybe four or five more issues that aren't even in a row, but are just sporadic between this issue 98 and the one like lower than the 120s. So I got like four or five to read plus an annual. So I'll get to those over the next couple of weeks, but it was nice getting into these Iron Men. I only need a handful more to have 100 and up. I have all of them from 120 and up. So I'm going to eventually work on that. Just getting these last maybe 13 or 14 issues to have number 100 and up. And looking at it, Mike, I probably could get one all the way through, because, you know, I could get a lower grade number one for a reasonable price being that that's, you know, nowhere near his first appearance, and I could actually get a full run of Iron Man, which would be nice to have, because there's no way I'd ever have, what is it? Is it Tales of Suspense 39?
Yeah.
I would never be able to get that, but I could at least have a full run of,
never
of
say Iron never. Man.
Yeah, I know, but,
never
you know.
Never say never.
Maybe someday when I win the lottery.
All right, well, my book is Amazing Spider-Man 258.
258.
And this is after the Puma stuff. The arc that he was trying to kill him because the Rose hired Puma to kill Spider-Man. And this is the issue right after, too. Mary Jane discovering that Peter Parker is Spider-Man, because there was a... She essentially goes over to see what's going on with Peter. She walks in. Peter kicks her out. And then she walks back in and she hears a bunch of fighting. That's when Puma attacked at his apartment. And they started throwing down and the room was trashed. And she put two and two together, plus of all the other stuff she's seen. And she knows that Peter's Spider-Man. So Peter's having to deal with that. He's also having to deal with the fallout of Aunt May because he's dropped out of grad school and she's really upset with him. And they were supposed to have a meeting and he never showed up. So he has to deal with that. And then his costume is running him into the ground. So he's like, he thinks he sleeps 10 hours, but he really is not getting any sleep whatsoever because his body's out there swinging. And this is the point where he just says, screw this. I'm going to talk to Reed Richards because he promised me he would analyze my suit. And I'm going to go over and see what the hell's going on. And sure enough, he gets there. Reed's sort of busy with Johnny. They're working on an experiment. And he says, okay, let me see the suit. So take out the suit off. The suit's a little resistant. He takes the suit off. He does his analysis and says, wow, this suit's alive.
Right, and he had gotten it on that Beyonder planet, right, during Secret Wars?
Yeah, he got it on the planet, on Secret Wars, and he's like, this is alive. The webs are actually organic, which Puma had discovered earlier. And that's when Spider-Man was like, what? What do you mean organic? And so the webs and everything is organic. He's like, oh boy, this thing's alive, and it's trying to take over me. And when Reed tells him that, the suit doesn't want to let him go. Like, it essentially takes over his whole body. And Reed doesn't know what to do. He's like, Johnny's like, should I light him up? Should I burn it off of him? And Reed's like, no, you could probably, you'll give him third-degree burns if you did that. Reed stretches around the corner, and he already has a sonic weapon. I guess he thinks it might work. And he blasts him with the sonic weapon. And the costume essentially comes out, and then Johnny like keeps flames around it while he gets a contraption to encase the costume. And then Peter's standing there in his underwear because he has nothing. I mean, he uses this the Venom symbiote he can form any type of clothes, so he hasn't been wearing any like really. Real clothes. He's just been forming whatever clothes he's imagined he wants to wear. So he's sitting there in his underwear and he's like, well, how am I supposed to get back? And at this time, he doesn't want Johnny and Reed to know his identity. So he's like covering his face. So he's trying to hide his face as he's sitting there in his underwear.
Well, I didn't realize that they didn't know who he was still at that point.
Yeah, they still don't know who he is. So he's hiding his face and he's like, Reed says, Johnny, can you go grab him some clothes or something? And Johnny brings back an old FF outfit that he used to wear. And then he brings him a bag. And
he puts a
paper bag over his head. He has to go home in this outfit. He's wearing a Fantastic Four outfit. And he runs into this crime scene. And he has to perform to stop these criminals in this bag and Fantastic Four outfit. And everybody's wondering, well, who is this masked man? Is he the unknown superhero? Because if you know, at this time, there was the unknown comic. So they called him the unknown superhero. And he thwarted that and then went back to his place. And there's still stuff going on with Puma. As even though Kingpin called off the hit that Rose put on Puma because Rose is working for the Kingpin, there's a lot of other mysterious things going up because Hobgoblin, who's supposedly dead, shows up at Rose's place and said, you know, I want to work with you. And he goes, how do I know you're really Hobgoblin? You're supposed to be dead. And he puts him through a series of tests and he realizes this is Hobgoblin. So he's going to be working with Rose. But this is a great Spider-Man series that it's been so good that I had already, even though I've read all these stuff on Marvel Unlimited, I bought everything I read. Mm. So I bought the most expensive one, I think, is $253 or what is it? $254. The one with the black costume that had the first time the black costume shows out of Secret Wars.
Oh, 252.
Yeah, 252.
Yeah, how you got? Where did you get that? I saw that you picked it up.
I got
did
it
get that
from mycomicshop.com.
Was it overly expensive?
Well, it was the most expensive one. It was a fine. I think I got it for $60.
Oh, okay, that's not bad. Yeah. That I love this era. I love the way that the interweaving of like the different subplots and stuff, and you know you always have something going on, bringing you from one issue to the next, and I thought it was just such great writing.
Yeah, it was really good. So I'm continuing my journey, and then I'll order some more because I bought all the issues through the Puma issues, and this was the first one out, so I'm gonna, when I place my next order, I'll be getting this issue too.
Nice. That's awesome. I'm glad you're enjoying that, because you said you have read all this before, or you're just
reading
this?
No, I haven't read it before.
Yeah, oh god, I love this stuff. This is the stuff that I think I was telling you the other day. This is where I started, you know, I think 254 and up was when I started just buying every single issue without missing an issue.
Yeah.
This is what I remember from my first trips to the comic shop and stuff. Getting
right.
All this stuff. Yeah.
Well, I got into it because I just finished Clone Saga and I was listening to a podcast, the Epic Marvel podcast. And they were going over the Epic collection of DeFalco and Friends, and I was like, oh man, I love that team. Why haven't I read this?
So, yeah. That's cool. Good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah. Does anybody have anything else?
Nope. I'm finito.
How about you, Rob?
I have a Brave and the Bold that I read this morning. I can just talk about very quickly if you'd like.
Okay.
All right, so it's Brave and the Bold, number 134, with Batman and Green Lantern. I've never read this one before. I read it this morning. It's, of course, by Bob Haney and Jim Aparo. So I'll just go through it. I won't go through it beat by beat, but basically what the plot is. What we've got here is that there's somebody – it doesn't give any of the actual countries in the world. It doesn't tell you exactly where it is, but there's a bridge going from the west to the east, and there's a checkpoint in the middle. So obviously we're talking about Germany here in the 70s, and there's a bicyclist who's getting across and is at first waved through, and then they realize that something funny is going on. They try to stop him. Until he gets to the east, and then he's brought over, and it turns out once he takes off his overcoat and his hat, and he hands over his ring that it's Green Lantern, and They say that the People's Republic welcomes you, but they beat the crap out of them and they bring them over. And so basically what it is the Green Lantern is defecting to the east, and they're beating him up, which seems counterproductive, but he's claiming that he's defecting to the east and has, you know, a lot of Air Force and so forth secrets to share with the communists, and they're beating him up somehow to get him to prove that he really does mean it. I'm not sure how beating him up would help, but anyhow, they're working him over. And Batman has been called in by the government to bring back Green Lantern, and if he can't do that, to kill him. Now, it shows that this conversation is being eavesdropped on by a van outside of what looks like the White House, but anyhow, it's a governmental building. So they're being spied upon. This conversation is being spied upon. So Batman parachutes in, and he has a contact he's supposed to talk to, but they're ambushed by a bunch of soldiers, and he's captured, and he's brought into the government facility in the east, and he confronts Hal Jordan and punches him in the face, and the commandant there, it's in charge, is, you know, congratulates everyone for being very convincing, but that, you know, he is not gullible, and he's going to make sure that this is all on the up and up, that basically Green Lantern really is defecting, and that Batman really is there to try to try to save him, bring him back, and that this isn't all a plot to make it appear that Green Lantern really has defected. So they have a special thing that's even worse than brainwashing. That's called the demolishment. So they're going to put Batman through the demolishment, which nobody can go through without actually breaking down, and thereby they'll know for sure what's going on. So the first thing is a bunch of mind altering drugs, and Batman's is not really affected by that because of his conditioning. Then they put him in an isolation chamber, so he doesn't know where he is and stuff, and they say that the most hardy people go insane after 2 days, but they have days and days of Batman in there, and the commandant thinks that it's starting to work because they hear him just repeating gibberish over and over again. They say that it sounds like Joe Chill, Joe Chill, Joe Chill, and so he thinks that it's working, but Green Lantern realizes that Batman's saying it like a mantra to keep himself from going crazy, knowing what Joe Chill means. And then they put him in like almost like a, like, you know, those things that they put astronauts in that goes around and around in circles really fast to simulate the G-force and stuff. It looks like they're putting Batman in that, and it's going around in circles, but it also has like crazy sounds and visuals as well that is supposed to just absolutely make people insane. So Batman faints under that, and that's when the commandant believes that he really has Batman under his thumb, because his body's shutting down to keep him from experience any more of this torture. But then when he comes to, Batman says, "Oh, you can't beat me." And so the commandant says, "Oh, well, all of that's just our old brainwashing technique. That's a warmer upper, as you Americans would say, that we haven't even started the real demolishment. And that is beyond, you know, behind this door." And that totally breaks Batman down, and he says, "No, I can't take any more. Mercy, mercy." And he says, "Oh, okay, you'll do anything? Then here, take this gun and shoot Green Lantern." And so he does. He shoots three times, but Green Lantern doesn't understand why he's still alive. And the commandant explains that was the final part of the demolishment. It was blanks, and it proves that Batman has totally cracked by telling him that the demolishment hadn't even begun. Where the outside is the door is just the freedom, and Batman, you know, just crawls and says, "Don't hurt me anymore. Don't hurt me." And Green Lantern just can't believe it that Batman's crying like a child. And he's like, "Stop, don't do any more to Batman." He's like, I have a confession to make." So they go to the back to the office of the commandant, and he admits that the whole thing was a plot from the beginning, his defection, and even with Batman coming to quote unquote rescue him and everything else, what they wanted was the information to this demolishment, so they could condition their own agents in the United States against it. So we had every single angle covered, he says, except for the fact that nobody thought that Batman would break under the demolishment. So we thought we were going to be clever. And so he's just saying, you know, "We beg you, don't torture Batman. You know, we'll do anything." But he knows that his ring is somewhere in the room, but he doesn't know exactly where. And then when the commandant's pouring himself some tea, he realizes that it was hidden in the urn that's in there. So he manages to say his oath, and the ring comes back onto his finger, and he gets Batman, and they fly away in a Green Lantern hot air balloon, because he says that he doesn't have enough energy to create a jet or anything. So at the last, now fighter jets are coming after them. And at the last minute, he gets rid of his hot air balloon and just fires a tiny little missile at the plane and blows up the communist plane. And as they're falling to the ground, he makes a Green Lantern like air mattress to keep them from being killed. And so then they end up hiding. They find somebody to hide them, and they're crossing back onto the west side. And Batman is still collapsed in the back of a wagon full of hay, and his glove is still out, is reaching out, and he doesn't. And Green Lantern thinks he doesn't realize what Batman's doing, and the commandant is there, but instead, Batman grabs the commandant and says, "Drive, Green Lantern, drive," and tosses him off the bridge into the water. And when they're safe, Green Lantern, you know, says, "We made it," and like, "You weren't brainwashed at all." He's like, "No, but I was getting so close. I figured I better fake it to avoid more." And he explains that he figured that the commandant had blanks on the gun. Otherwise, he chanced that, you know, Batman would turn it on him, and so on and so forth. And so, you know, it turns out that Batman wasn't defeated by the demolishment, but he was close. But since Green Lantern was able to get his ring back, they were successful. And now Batman has all the information that he needs for the demolishment, and they're taking it back to the United States. So overall, it was a wacky story, just like a Bob Haney story would be, but I enjoyed it quite a bit. And coincidentally, because I just picked it at random this morning, it also had a full-page ad for Who or What is the Changing Man, a new kind of superhero from Steve Ditko and DC, coming your way March 8th. So just coincidentally, it had a full-page ad for issue number one for Steve Ditko's creation. So that was interesting as well. But yeah, I enjoyed that one. I love the Brave and the Bold issues regardless. They're always a fun, you know, one-and-done read.
Yeah. I had read one too, but I'll save it for later.
Okay. You got nothing else you wanted to cover?
No, I think I'm good. I think I'm going to cover it in the DC episode.
Okay. I guess that's it then, huh?
All right. Well, you've been listening to Retrocast with Chris at MythMakingETC, Rob at Rob Krieger, like Seeger, and I'm at Mike Myers Brunch on the Twitter machines. And we are located at geekbrunchpodcast.com. And also on Facebook, you could follow the episodes there as well under Geek Brunch Podcast. Click the like button. And I think that's about it. You guys have anything else?
No, I didn't know if you did. You want to stay on just for a minute, Mike? And you said you wanted to ask me something about Batman, or
yeah, let's do you want to do that another time? Yeah, do you have time now?
Yeah, I've got a few minutes, sure.
All right. Well, we'll wrap this one up. And
okay, I will bid you adieu.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
Yep.
Have a good Sunday.
Enjoy yourself, Chris.
Going back to work. I hope you're energized.
Yeah. Yeah, have some good rest.
Enjoy.
You guys take it easy.
Thanks.